I do not know what. Okay, do what you must. Let's get over with.
All right. Which one you want to do first? You want to do wrestling, or you want to do Cats and Cats?
Actually, it's your ballpark, man. You're actually the boss of this. I know. Where is your brother?
Oh, he's busy with my mom's garden right now.
All right. Sure. Why not?
Okay. All right then. All right. Let me get this going. I guess I'll start with Cats and Cats first. All right. Alright, start recording.
Could I leave the background music on?
Yeah, sure.
It's from Streets of Rage. It's very relaxing. You hear?
Okay, hold on. Okay, you ready?
I am ready.
Okay.
What do we do first?
Nah, we'll just do Cat the Cats first, and then we'll go to wrestling.
Okay. Because you want your brother to be involved. Yeah. I got it.
No, I don't want... No, because, like, he's outside in the garden, and, like, I told him this week's topics today, and he was like, I have no idea. And I was like, okay, good. Just don't join then.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1... Hello everybody, this is Captain Katz. Welcome back to the show, and here with me via Skype is Omega Kai.
It's via satellite, via Skype. Yes, I'm here.
Yes. Okay, so let's start the show. Okay, so there's been a couple of big news that came out over the week. First and foremost, let's do a little quick one right here. And it's about everyone's favorite assassin, Keanu Reeves and John Wick. Released a press release stating that John Wick was pushed back about an entire year. So originally it was supposed to be released on May 21st, 2021, but they pushed it to the new date, which is May 27th, 2022. That year's Memorial Day weekend. The reason why they pushed it back is because there was a scheduling conflict with The Matrix 4, which Keanu was 4 weeks into filming before the whole coronavirus thing shut down production of it. So what do you think of that? I know it's still early. I know we're not even in 2021 yet, but we're still, you know, but they're pushing it to 2022. What do you think of that?
It's fine. It's understandable. It's one of those things where you can't help it. Especially, he's only human. He can't really do like Andy Lau, who does 20 films a day, or, you know, 70s, 60s Shaw Brothers, where a director would do, like, 6-7 films a day directing. Do scene 1 from movie 3, do scene 3 from movie 5, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Also, production value. Matrix and John Wick. You gotta give him time. You want the best.
Yeah.
Don't ask for lemonade, man. That's all I gotta say. Ask for that margarita.
Yeah. And if you guys want to get your fix of Keanu Reeves, just remember Cyberpunk 2077 is coming out later this year in September. So if you want to see him being portrayed as Johnny Silverhand, if you have an Xbox One, PlayStation 4, or PC, put your reserve. Put your pre-order now for the reserve of the game, and you'll get your Keanu Reeves fix for this year.
My theory on Cyberpunk with Keanu Reeves, by the way, that he's actually John Mnemonic, realizing he's a Neo from the Matrix, and he's coming back. This time he needs a weapon. I'm not that far off.
Yeah, that's true.
And then Rufus comes down and tells him he needs an adventure with, Bill.
Yeah. And then other news that's coming out of Hollywood is the battle between AMC and Universal. So for many of you who don't know what's going on between the two, It's all because of a little film that came out 3 weeks ago called Trolls World Tour. It made history. Universal made history by releasing it simultaneously on home release through PVOD or Premium Video On Demand, and also box office open weekend. So in 3 weeks, the film made $100 million in 3 weeks on the PVOD alone.
Yeah.
And reported by Wall Street Journal that it took the last film in the Trolls series took them 5 months to reach that number.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good news. I mean, good news for Universal. Good news for the people, right, who made the film. And it's kind of obvious that you say that, you know, they made 100 million. No. You got to think the other way. Consumer saved 500 million. We're not buying popcorn. That's
right.
Pretty much. That's what it is. It's I think it's a bonus, to be honest. Especially that kind of film. You want the best quality. Anything with computer, you know, generated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With 4K especially. I mean, tough for AMCs, for moviegoers who loves them. But I'm not gonna dog Universal for doing what they had to do. And it's been proven that it worked.
Yes.
Literally, this is the litmus test. Watching a movie live at home works.
Yeah. And for many of you who don't know, if you decide to get Trolls at home, World Tour at home, it's going to cost you at least $20, I think $20 to $30. You keep it for 48 hours. You can watch as many times as you want for 48 hours.
Nice. Have a party.
Pretty much. So basically, okay, so it's like this. Here in California, just two tickets alone, two adult tickets to go see any movie is like almost 20, 25 bucks alone. You know?
It depends if it's, you know, I'm being anal about it. I always go with the cheap hours, not the matinee hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's the price for the cheap hours, by the way.
Yeah.
It shows that we don't go to the matinee.
Yeah.
We don't go to opening night.
And then, you just go to opening night. And then, and plus on top of that too, you know, you want popcorn, you want candy, you want soda, that all adds up.
Yeah.
You know, so for the average two people to go to the theaters today, you know, to add food and everything and plus tickets, that's roughly almost about 50 to 60 bucks.
Mm-hmm. And also the gas costs, if you're not riding public transportation, plus the fact that, you know, COVID-19. So.
Right. So why spend, to do all that, add gas and everything like that. So let's just round it up to $80, okay, just to go to see a movie.
Yes.
Why would I want to spend all that money if I can just rent the film for 30 bucks and go to the store, or if I already have it at home, like a bag of popcorn, or just make fresh popcorn, or grab any snack I want and just chill on my couch, relax, enjoying it.
Even
with
then,
no other people there.
And even then, you can just order food and it's cheaper. In the wrong way, yeah. Popcorn is like a pizza. The same value price. But pizza's better.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, it's the only benefit factor, that would, you know, the only thing I benefit from it the most is time. I don't got to wait in line. I don't have to wait for the hours to show them. I just pick the time along, watch it, and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So that alone is worth it. And especially in a low discount. To be honest, I'm willing to pay more, but hopefully don't figure out that I'm willing to pay more. You know what I mean? A good deal is a good deal. You want shut up a little bit on it.
Mm-hmm.
Ruin it for everybody.
And so, and then AMC, who has been reported by some time already that they are not going to file bankruptcy. They're on the verge of bankruptcy, but they do not want to file bankruptcy. According to numerous reports, they're going to blackball Universal Films, even though they've already made deals with them for two upcoming films later this year.
Yeah, also the old films too. Any Universal old films cannot be played in AMC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So regardless of whoever wins the battle, the consumer is going to benefit from this.
I want to know consumers. They can benefit from the universal move, obviously, and universal benefit from that. The yes. working class and the people who work in AMC theaters is about what 80,000 personnel, give or take. Mm-hmm. Last time I checked.
Right.
They might be hindered. Also, you know, COVID-19, they're not working anyway. And now, if this goes under, they're not really returning to work. They're returning to like maybe an empty, non-public place. Also, it takes time for people to transition back into public and social gathering again. So,
it's right.
AMC is hurting bad on this.
It is. It is. It really is.
But you know, blackballing, I'm really against that. It's maybe because it was Chinese, Chinese funded, and that practice of blacklisting and blackballing. I don't know if you watched that episode of Seinfeld, names with the Chinese restaurant. It's actually playing out in effect, and a little bit shady business dealing between the government of China and also the person who purchased majority share of AMC, which he supposedly sold but can't cash out to 2023, I think. For less, he was a big loss.
Right.
I think $300 million loss, approximately.
Jeez, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, I did some research. Now, yeah. What do you think?
So, what do I think of this whole situation?
Yeah, what do you think? The blackballing.
Okay,
and all that?
Well, so I blackballing, I it's bad. It's bad from a business point of view because. Now, who wants to do business with them, seeing what's going on, not only that too, but also there are also rumors and speculation too that they might get bought out by Cinépolis as well, but those are Cinépolis, thank you. But those are rumors going on right now, but it does back up that numerous reports saying that they don't want to file bankruptcy, AMC. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But my hope is Cinépolis not buy them out, but just buy the real estate out and revamp it. It's better for them to invest on the real estate than the actual company, I think.
Okay.
Kind of like what Kmart did when he went under. And turns out they had all that real estate. Wow. They sold it or they kept it and ran them out. They actually made a lot of money from it, more than the actual retail business.
That's true.
True. It's Sears now, or Burlington Coat Factory, or whatever store that decided to take over. And mom and pop, ironically, local stores that took over.
Yeah, I know for a fact too. Kmart's that I used to go to, they're both Walmarts now.
Yeah, unless they sold that property to them. Or, I used to go to is like a Burlington Coat Factory next to a Northgate.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
Well, yeah.
The yeah, village. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Moving right along to the next topic. Some news out of Japan. One of the famous manga art contests is actually opening doors internationally. The 100th annual Tezuko Manga Contest, Manga Contest, for the first time ever, it's going to be opening its doors internationally for international artists to be entering into to be manga creators, to getting their foot into the industry. It was reported by a press release via Shonen Jump. Because Shonen Jump is also one of the head companies that actually run this contest, says that the international people who want to participate in this can start submitting things as of this past Friday, May 1st. Last day of submission will be September 1st, Japan time, on midnight. So, and they're only having first, second, and an honorary mention. Whoever wins first place gets 2 million yen. Their work, assigned a contract so their work can be published either digital or print. Second place will win 1 million yen and also getting their work published digital or print. And the honorable mention will just get $500,000, and all three contestant winners from the international point of view will be invited to go to the award ceremony later this year in Japan, in Tokyo, Japan. So what do you think of this? And this is the first time this contest has opened its doors up to the international to the international artists around the world. So what do you think of that?
My submission, this play. Well, honestly, if I would submit some artwork to this, I would submit an anime style, a storytelling of how a person who's a young artist try and make it big, and then suddenly there's a miraculous tournament of anime artists out there in Japan open for the public for the first time in history. Story ended. And it will play itself out. So itself is, you know, it's also a good manga series, to be honest. It's one of those things where it's like a Dragon Ball Z motif. Army of Champions. So it's I like it. It's playing to the classical, you know, arc of having a contest, the best in the world, and the underdog wins, hopefully. I was supposed to be the underdog.
Right.
It'd be some guy with no arms or legs. I mean, to be honest, I'm voting for somebody who really could show something more than just good artwork. It's just the good methodology of it. If he could somehow just revamp like Renaissance style into anime style, or you know, combine something that never been seen before and create a new type of artistic, maybe a fusion of manga and whatever, some ancient, you know, Egyptian art or something, you know, there's something
right.
Hope it breeds more creativity, so
right.
Yeah.
And then
okay. To be honest, is it old-fashioned rule pen paper coloring, or computer can be used?
You can send it. You can send your work digitally. There's a website where we actually, I'm going to post the website and also the article about this this upcoming Tuesday at Captain Cats and the Night Rider website, where you can they'll have the information how to submit it. You can submit it from digital. And even if you need to translate it from English to Japanese, or they have a built-in translator that you can translate your work.
Okay.
Or it will help you how to write it in Japanese. So you would send two copies: the original copy and also the translated copy.
Okay.
And not only that too, but also the judges this year are actually some of the big names in anime, well, in the manga industry right now.
Akira Toriyama.
Yes,
that's my favorite think of.
The creator of My Hero Academia, the creator of One Piece, the creator of Slam Dunk.
Ooh, Slam Dunk.
The creator of Slam Dunk, the basketball one.
Mm-hmm. I know.
The creator of Blue Exodus, and also the Osama production, named the Osama Tezuka production, is named after the father of all manga, Osama Tezuka, the creator of Astro Boy.
Okay. How about the big dog?
So
is he gonna be there himself? The Miyazaki?
No.
I know he's
Miyazaki. Miyazaki won't be there, but there's gonna be those judges, and also both the editors in chief of Shonen Jump and Weekly Shonen Jump and the Digital Shonen Jump.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
They're gonna be doing all the judging.
Yeah, it's a big event. It was kind of hard because it's not really a social gathering. It's going to be online submission. So it's no drama of seeing the creator behind the work. You might see a picture of him or a Skype or something. But it's kind of hard, you know. You want to showcase, you want to meet the person kind of thing.
Yes.
Is it only particular to manga style? Or could you be like different type of like style?
From the international point of view, I don't know. I haven't. They haven't given out any more information on that. But they say sometime later in May, mm-hmm. they're going to do a YouTube video to clarify all the rules and everything, and the do's and don'ts of submission, and what are they looking for. So
okay, because I was thinking. If they exclude somebody like a Todd McFarlane or a Jim Lee, who happens not to be, you know, predominantly manga style, that'd be a loss to the art, you know, community. So hopefully it's open for everybody. Manga-esque, I'll take. I'll take that as part of the rule, but not like the, you know, the, I guess the law, but
right.
It's one of those things. It's, you know, subjective. It's a tournament of champions. So
yeah. And then so moving right along. So but before we move right along to anybody who is going to enter this this tournament or this contest, we wish you the best of luck and hope fortune lays smiles upon you, whoever wins. So moving right along from anime, we're gonna go to video games. So this week, a game that hasn't had a sequel in almost 30 years just got a sequel released this week, Streets of Rage 4. Now, Omega Kai and I have both played it. We still play it. What do you think of it?
Well, tell me what you think of it. You kind of know what I feel, so.
Honestly, I think it is a great game. It's a game of a year contender. I honestly believe that because it brings back everything what made Streets of Rage 1, 2, and 3 great, especially 2 and 3. Well, especially 1 and 2. 3 was all right. There was a little hiccups here and there in that one, but it was still good nevertheless. They took all the goodness, all the great stuff that made those three games great and brought them over and reinvented and gave up the right tweaks and adjustments that they needed to polishing to make it feel like, okay, this series can still play with the big boys and girls of gaming in 2020. And they did a great job. The companies that worked on it did a phenomenal job on this game. It's like part beat 'em up, part fighting game because of the juggling combos. Like literally, I have never seen a beat 'em up game that you can actually do juggle combos, air combos.
And wall bomb combos and other stuff. It's more to it than just that. But it's more in depth than it was. Once was, I guess.
Yeah.
But you know, like you said, I'm playing it right now. By the way, that's my answer. So, I'm actually playing it during this thing. And first of all, ditto what you said, and plus the mechanics more in depth than I thought it would be. Wall bomb combos, air combos, juggles, and the fact that you pick your style of attack to a mid-range, short range, you can do a bound combo. You know, there's some bread and butter combos that you can use. That's mostly a fighting game kind of thing, you know. And the fact that there's modes where it's four-player battle mode, which is good. And I'm hoping eventually this becomes like a Smash-type game, you know, or a fighting game in general. It's, the lore is still there. The bad guys and the good guys pretty much the same amount of numbers, and you can just make them into a fighting game. The thing that got me the most was nostalgia. It's nostalgia of not the old game, nostalgia that it was something brand new, and that it brought something to the table more than just Final Fight back in the days. This is you know, the reason why this game was made, just to be honest, was to compete with Final Fight. And the Final Fight has its issues because all the console release were horrible. I mean, everybody remember the console release of Final Fight 1 on was it Super Nintendo? You only had one character. And then they actually made a Final Fight for the character that they couldn't, you know, put in the game that's for Final Fight 2, which is a Final Fight guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Final Fight kind of flopped it. But what Sega did was made this game, and they kind of like, hey, you know what? We can put, like, two players here. We can do it. We just have three players, you know. Just don't overthink it. Just put me and them come basics. And it made sure that we could have fun with friends. It's just one of those games. And the fact that we all learned something new as this one comes up, it felt good. It's like, it's not the one I'm used to, but I like the fact that it's brand new and something new to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I remember some of the bosses, and they're back.
I was like, when I saw some of the bosses, like the old school bosses, I was like, oh man, I remember that one. I remember this. I remember that. Yeah. You know,
or the same a lot of
memories were coming back to me when I was playing this.
Yeah, but you know, those ripoffs they have. I forgot how that the original game was making fun of Final Fight so much. Oh look, that's their version of Poison, wearing M. Bison costume. You know, back in the days, they were getting away with that. They were making fun of the other company badly.
So, yeah.
And then you see a guy in a green suit, in a shell, a turtle shell with some knee pads. Like, he's a Ninja Turtle costume guy. And the guy with the purple mohawk's back, the kung fu guy.
Yeah.
The new guys, I have nothing against them. They're brand new, but they remind me of like the henchman from Shaolin Soccer. The guy keeps his hand in his pockets all the time. It's something about it. It's fun. It's like there's stuff you gotta look for that's a little bit of Easter eggs and stuff.
Yeah.
But gameplay mechanic wise, to be honest, I haven't scratched the surface. It's like that.
And yeah, same here. I agree with you. Like I haven't even like I know there's so much more I can do in this game, and I haven't even like spent time in the laboratory and picked this game apart yet. You know. Another thing too about this game is that so much Easter eggs and so much things to unlock.
Yeah.
You know, and the replayability of this game is on a high level. Kind of like what Doom Eternal did. The replay value of that game is also on a high level. So this is like both Doom Eternal and Streets of Rage 4.
It says a great lot because games. It's an open-ended game and it's only about 12 stages, I think. I don't remember exact, but either way, it's one of those things where it's like it should be, you know, one and done kind of thing. Like you want to watch a movie just to watch it, and you know, not gonna probably buy the series or anything like that. It's great. It's a great game, and it's worth the replay value, like you said. Can I ask you one question?
Do what?
Can I ask you one question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, when the game came out, right, there was missing one player. That happened to be my favorite, and I was so pissed. But then when I finally got to that point where he's unlockable, oh my god. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
I was so glee. I was like, oh man, that's my guy. Like, you know what I'm talking about, Adam?
Yeah.
So I was so happy. At first, I was kind of mad that he wasn't in all the, you know, trailers or anything. They kind of kept that a secret, you know, under the radar. Because you get to play with as his daughter. I'm like, oh man, his daughter's substituting, you know, him. So I'm like, I want the original guy. And then turns out I got him. And I was so enthralled. I was like, oh, I got Adam finally. Because back in the day, me and my nephew, you know, we always fight over who gets to be Adam. Fine, I'll be Axel. You know, it's Axel Blaze. Adam's the cool guy. Everybody wants to play as Adam. He has that reach, that little cheap turnaround glitch. Because I always passed the game with Adam. It was the other guys I had trouble with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, was there anything that disappoints you that about the game?
Nothing. There's nothing that hasn't disappointed me. The difficulty level, it goes up little by little depending on what level you go to. If you do it from, like, you know, the first stage all the way up, like...
From easy to medium?
Like, mathematically. Yeah, like, the easy to medium up to hard. Like, it ranks up just like how I remember it back in the day. Which I love. So I didn't have any problem with that. The one thing that I do love the most that I think no other beat 'em up game back then and even now can boast about is the music. The music in this game was like awesome, like crazy awesome. Even the games back in the first three games, a lot of it was like stuff that here's a story if people don't know. So the music composers for the games, for the first three games, used to go to the nightclubs all the time.
Yeah.
They used to go to the nightclubs all the time and then went to work at, say, the following morning when the clubs were all closed. They just went straight to work. They brought a lot of that music and the club scene music, the techno, the house, the European house and French techno and stuff like that. They brought that into the game series, and we never heard that type of music ever in games before, especially to the now iconic and classic soundtrack for the second game, Streets of Rage 2, which is like so iconic, so classic. You can even just play it. If you get the vinyl of it, you could play that in a club today and nobody wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah, they brought in the electro jazz, electro blues style techno to it. from the
from
you know late 80s to early 90s type.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, we used to make fun of it that way. Now we're like, well, you know, it's not bad. Now everything has it. Like,
Oh, okay, so I was gonna say, so like when I heard the music for this game, I was like, you know what, this is great, this is really great music. They did bring back the two creators of the music, but not only that, but they brought a whole lot of guests, guest composers, and I'm not talking about like one and done cheesy one hit wonder composers. No, these are like composers that actually like literally left marks in the gaming industry for what they've done and everything. For example, like let me read you the list of the people who actually worked on this. This is just like crazy, like crazy. People who worked on this game, music wise, because it's just phenomenal. Hold on, let me see.
I wanted this game in Japan when it came out for the PS4 and the Xbox or the Nintendo Switch. Is it by their original Japanese title, or is it Streets of Rage over there too?
Oh, Bare Knuckle.
Yeah, Bare Knuckle.
Yeah. I know in Japan, I know when they release this game in Japan, I know it's called Bare Knuckle over there.
Yeah, I know. But is it Bare Knuckle now when it's overseas in Japan?
Yeah.
And just my new stuff, you know. I kind of want that Bare Knuckle title screen.
Uh-huh. Mm.
But you know why they switched the name to Streets of Rage, right?
No, I don't know.
It was based on, because the guy who made the game saw an American movie. Pretty much the whole game is based around it. You know the name of that movie? It's a spoof off it. That's why it's a lot of people don't know. Streets of Fire.
No, I don't know.
Streets of Fire.
Oh.
If you watch it, the scene with the bar and the building, the structures, the brick buildings, all that, and the nightlife, that's where they stole it from.
Ah, okay.
Classical film. You know, cop John, you know, 80s, 90s cop genre, tough guy kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Where I call it Class B Charles Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Okay. So here's the list. Okay. So the main composer who did this is named Oliver Devary. He's famous for having a lot of great soundtracks that he created for games like Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, Supernova, Tetromancer, Vampire, A Plague's Tale, Remember Me. But then here are the people that they brought in a lot of for the guests. You have Yoko Shimomura. And she's a legend in the gaming industry for music. For many people who don't know who she is, okay, she's the one that created the soundtrack for Street Fighter 2. Not only that, she also went on and did soundtracks for other games, such as Codename Viper, Nemo, King of Dragons, Breath of Fire, The Punisher, Live, Front Mission, Super Mario RPG, Tomba No. 1, Parasite Eve. And that's just the 90s. 2000, she went on to do Kingdom Hearts, Luminous Arc 2, the Mario and Luigi series, Radiant Historia. Let's see, what else? Tetra Battle, Terra Battles, Final Fantasy. So, yeah. So, she's a big player. They also had Kenji Yamaguchi, and he's the guy who did the music for Tecmo Bowl, Ninja Gaiden, Super Tecmo Bowl, Oshima Tactics, Tecmo Cup Super Soccer Game, The Messenger. He did a bonus track on that game. They also had Harumi Fujita. She did the music for Ghosts and Goblins, Bionic Commando, Tiger Road, 1943 Kai, Strider, Willow, Gargoyle's Quest, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers. She did two levels of music for Mega Man 3. Mm-hmm. Polar, Polestar, Blazing Stars, Tumba, Spider-Saurus. And he also had, Yuzu Koricho, one half of the team that created the music for the Streets of Rage series. Not only that, but he also did music for Yeast Books 1 and 2, The Return to Ishtar, Shinobi, Mystic, The Revenge of Shinobi, Space Harrier, but he did that for the Sharp X68 version. Act Riser, the Game Gear version of Shinobi, Sonic and Sonic the Hedgehog, Super Island Adventure, Eye of the Beholder, Batman Returns, mm-hmm. so on. Yeah, so on and so forth. This guy has created like tons of music and even did music for DDR. So, not only that, but also you had his partner in crime with the music, Motohiro Kawashima. He also went on and did works for, besides Streets of Rage, he also did Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, Eye of the Beholder for the Mega CD version, Group S Challenge, Amazing Island, Dead Heat, Oh Dear, and then you also had Hideki Nakamura, who was originally was supposed to be on the game, and he was the creator. He did the music for Jet Set Radio and Jet Grind Radio, and also the Yakuza series and stuff like that. But he couldn't because of a conflict of scheduling of time. So you had a lot of great, like, legendary composers in the gaming industry that come in and did tracks and stuff like that in this game. And, like, the music is just phenomenal. It's great. I think one of the best that I've heard in a long time for like club music and stuff like that. So any other things you want to talk about Streets of Rage 4?
Nothing much. It's just I'm just happy it's out. It's one of those things where, you know, when you finally get here, you'll know what to say. You know what I mean? I'm just happy you're there. And, you know, the old adage, beggars can't be choosing. But they gave me a reason to beg for the first place. As long as they keep on doing that, I'm okay with. The question is, what's next? Hopefully this studio will make a revamp of what I used to like when I was a kid. The other stuff, you know, maybe a Golden Axe. I'm not a legitimate Golden Axe. Or something like that. Or Ultra Beast, you know, something. Or, you know what? If they do a Vector Man or Comic Zone, it's over. They got my money.
Yeah, or do some of them old treasure games on the Genesis.
Earthworm Jim, even.
Yeah, or Gunstar Heroes.
Oh, wow. Man, you can name it. You know, the retro, if done correctly and be true to the original form with modernization and upgrades, it's still good. Mm-hmm. It still holds up true.
Yeah, so basically, in other words, like Streets of Rage 4 just set that. Yeah. It set the bar for those any games that are going to be doing this in the near future.
Yeah, I'm looking at Capcom right now with Mega Man, so I'm looking at their direction. So
just look at Capcom's direction in general and just be like, okay, can you pump out something that's not Street Fighter?
It's good. I mean, Street Fighter is good, but it's not everything you ever did in your life, though.
Right.
Yeah, you know. Still.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Son Goku. Some nostalgia. Some old, stuff people never heard of before.
Yeah.
I'm old. Okay, accept it.
Okay. Alright then, folks. So that's it for the show this week. I hope you guys have a great time. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to us and being with us with you for this week. Just remember to stay safe out there. Wear your face protective mask and everything. Wash your hands and you keep your physical distance from one another. And I hope you guys have a great week. Until then, on behalf of Omega Kai, I am Captain Katz. Have a great week. Have a great time. See you guys next week. Until then, take care.
All right. Stay frosty.
stay frosty. Alright, that was good. That was actually really good.
Was it?
Yeah, it was like under 35 minutes.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was, man.
I clocked in longer. I clocked in at 40 minutes.